brought to you by Burr Foreman and broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Results Matter Radio, where we bring you pertinent business information and offer real-life solutions to help drive desired results for you, whatever your business may be.
All right, Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Results Matter Radio. Stone, how you doing?
Good morning, sir. I am doing well. I'm trying to get beefed up for this weekend. We're all headed to the Mountain House. We have to cook and serve 21 adults and 5 children. Hardly a sustainable effort or investment. So maybe there's something to be learned.
That's why we're having this episode today. That's why it's a sustainable roundtable.
Absolutely. It's all about me and what I need to accomplish between now and Sunday afternoon. This is going to be a fun segment. We have back in the studio with us, no stranger to the Business Radio X microphone, Mr. Scott Hitch with Burr & Foreman. How you doing, man?
Good morning. Doing well. How are you?
But we also have Mr. Scott Sadler with Boardwalk Capital Management. Am I saying that right?
Yes, you are.
Glad to be here. Welcome to the show, man.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, we are delighted to have you. If you would, give us just kind of a quick thumbnail sketch, mission, purpose of Boardwalk. Yeah. What are you guys trying to do for folks?
Yeah. Well, Boardwalk Capital is like a lot of other firms that are wealth managers, investment advisors. We're an independent advisor that has a niche in an interesting and growing area called sustainable and responsible investing. We help high net worth individuals. We also help institutions invest with their values as well as for profit and return. So that's kind of what we do in a nutshell.
Now, what are the values of a sustainable company?
Okay. Well, I would back up and say that sustainable investing is commonly referred to as ESG investing, and that acronym stands for environmental, social, and governance. So if those three items are the values of a sustainable company, they have varying degrees of those values. And we look at those three factors to determine if a company should be an investor's portfolio.
So how did you get into this line of work? Did you have a real job before this?
Let's blame it on my wife. I've been in the business for 26 years now. And 3 years ago, I left Goldman Sachs and started my own firm. And my wife and I were sitting around the dining room table, as often great decisions are made. And she said, why don't we do something we'll be proud of and invest in companies that that we believe in and advise our clients that way? And, of course, I, being a guy who'd done this at that point for 24 years, I said, well, that's voodoo. that doesn't work.
That didn't sell you? That wasn't persuasive?
No. And she's a born activist. I mean, she boycotted more companies than I think I bought things from. But she said, listen, wise guy, you've done a lot of things in your career that you really knew nothing about before you started, so why not take a look at this? And I think the bottom line is when I looked at it, I understood, first of all, why certain funds had failed in the past by being very, very narrow in their focus. A social fund that leaves out half of the investable companies is going to deviate from the market by more than the average fund will. So sometimes they do look bad. And that was the nature of social investing. And so that was what failed. But I figured out that if one invests in what we call best-of-class companies, the ones that are at the top of their industry in environmental factors, in social performance, and the governance of the companies, then we end up with what is really just a great list of companies, the best-managed companies in the world. And you can call that what you want. You can call it sustainable investing or smart investing or whatever. But I could buy into that. So that's a long answer to your wife made you do it.
But so there is a correlation between companies that practice sustainability and companies that are successful financially?
Absolutely. And what we tried to do was find those factors that mm-hmm. matter, that have predictive ability. And so if you think about just a company that's more efficient, it's going to have less volatility in its own results based on the price of its raw materials that it uses. If you use less of them, then it doesn't matter as much if the price of your inputs go up. And so you've insulated yourself. And I like to use the example of Southwest Airlines. Southwest Airlines hedged the cost of fuel for many years. And when the price of jet fuel was low, those hedges cost money. That comes out of the earnings of the company, and there's no benefit from it. But then all of a sudden, they shot up. And they looked like geniuses.
Right. Now who's smart?
And so what they had done was they had eliminated that variable from their earnings to some degree and became a more stable company, and investors pay a higher price in terms of the PE or the multiple they place on earnings for companies that are more stable. And so if you're more efficient with your use of raw materials, you're going to have long-term, more stable margins. And if you let's just switch to the social side for a second. Companies that have been named among the top places to work have been proven to be better performers in the stock market. And you think about it, it's very logical. If you train your employees well, if you take care of them, they take better care of your customers. You have repeat customers, you have higher profit margins, and so on. Lastly, disclosure and transparency are something that investors value. They don't like having to guess what your costs are or what your margins are. They want to know. And anything you hide costs you in terms of what people are willing to pay for your stock. So transparency is a benefit in terms of your cost of capital. If you show the banker your personal financial statement, you're going to get a better interest rate than not telling them everything, right? And if you don't tell the market what's going on, then they're going to have to guess. And they always guess the worst case. So all of those things are, a lower cost of capital, customer retention, more efficient use of resources. They're all about, higher margins and a better run company. And I can point to every one of them as helping the stock price.
My guy has not, and maybe it's my previous guy, my guy hasn't said the first thing about sustainable investing to me yet. Is it just because they're not that educated about it yet, these financial advisors, or is there any contingent that just doesn't have it figured out and is not for it yet? Or,
well, I mean, I don't know that people aren't for it. You're right that folks aren't educated on this subject yet. And there's a certain sense that you can't have your cake and eat it too, right? There's no way that can be a better company and have better returns. There's no way there could be less environmental damage and still have a better profit for us as the investor. But that is the truth. And but most folks think it's not possible, or it's kind of touchy-feely. And investment advisors are kind of macho, swashbuckling, fighter pilot type guys. They want to be macho, and they want to show you, how things really work. We're serious people. We know how to do it. And but honestly, my industry is such that we do a lot of things that aren't necessarily in the client's best interest because they're just the way things have always been done. So I think education is the issue. And if you poll investment advisors, they say funny things like, well, we're thinking of putting a 20% allocation to sustainable investing. Like, how does one do that? How does one 20% care? You can't be 20% pregnant.
So you think you've got to be all in on this.
you can't do 20% care about, the impact that your investments are making. And honestly, that's the touchy-feely part. Is like, if you could have the same returns with a better impact on the world around you, why wouldn't you just do that? Why wouldn't you just do that as the first step and then kind of come back and say, well, I'll try to decide other things.
Now, can a firm go from just a regular firm to a firm that practices sustainability? Like, how do they make that transition? Or it's like you got to start as a company that believes in these tenets and wants to move forward aligned that way.
Well, I guess I would ask to clarify the question. Are we talking about the investor or the company itself?
Well, the company you're investing in.
Yeah. Companies are evolving every day. And that is the beauty of how we're living now. I mean, we see that companies actually understand that sustainability isn't like this separate department now. He's the sustainability guy. No, they don't have the sustainability. They have 20 sustainability guys that all report to the CFO, along with Mr. Hitch here, we're on the board of the Green Chamber of the South. Here's a little plug, greencs.org. Ooh, right. I'm allowed to do that.
Yes.
But
it's another show.
There we go.
We'll send them a bill.
Yeah, there we go. But they have no money to pay. But we did an event last year where we brought in the sustainability directors of a dozen different entities and companies, colleges as well as big companies, and let business people sit down with them and chat with them at a table no bigger than, six people. And ask them questions about what is sustainability, what does it really mean, what are you doing? Is it a return on capital? Is this are you doing it because it's green, or is it greenwashing? And these are the questions that local business people ask, and they're wanting to know, how can I take from what you do some kernels of wisdom and apply them to my business? And at every table, people came away with the same answer: it's a return on investment. We can't just do things because they're green. We have to do things because they make sense financially first. And if you're Coca-Cola, maybe making financial sense is being careful with water, because the last thing they want to see is a place where they've used up a lot of the local water to make Cokes, and then there's a little kid running around with a plastic
bucket.
With
no water, right.
No water. So they understand that to be a brand identity and defending the brand, and that has value, financial value too. But companies understand that this is not this ancillary department, but it's really how business is done, and it's being incorporated into more and more areas of the business.
So now this type of investing, it seems like it's evolved. It started out, I guess, this kind of environmentally oriented or green or social, and now it's moved into sustainable.
It's funny. It started in the 1600s.
In the 1600s?
Yeah, with the Puritans who came over, and they wouldn't put their money in a lot of different things. And it wasn't like we had stock markets to invest in at
right.
the time. But they were very sure of their personal values, and they made sure that, you know, it didn't go into breweries.
That everything was aligned.
Yeah. And so they were sort of the original investors that invested socially. And it's evolved in probably 10 or 20 different ways. And there's so many phrases and so many different names for this. We do have a language problem, and that's part of the education, is that mm-hmm. we could call it green investing, social investing, ethical investing, sustainable investing, responsible investing. And these are all kissing cousins. And now we have impact investing, which is sort of the most extreme version of this, where you are trying to actually have a positive social impact first and get a financial return while doing so. So that's the sort of the long.
So there's a spectrum of
exactly.
companies that fit into each,
exactly.
I guess, management firm's portfolio. Mm-hmm. You decide what the rules are, right?
Well, yeah, and we, you know, we divide and conquer. We do certain things ourselves, and we have partners that do other things,
mm-hmm.
Other segments of a portfolio. So we stick with the large companies and fixed income, and we just tell people that you have the ability to segment any investment group. You can invest in large companies or small. You can invest in high return on capital companies or value companies or whatever is your style. And our style happens to be finding the sustainability leaders of the world that are going to compound good rates of return over time. We're going to segment the bond market by saying, you know, you can invest in or lend money to municipalities to do a variety of things. They could do, your money can go to the general obligation bond of the city of Atlanta. There's nothing really cool about that. Mm-hmm. Or you could finance schools or hospitals or green space or any of those things and say, I'm actually supporting the quality of life in a community by investing my money this way.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm getting the same return. I'm getting the same coupon, the same interest rate, the same credit quality, but I've decided to segment it that way. And you can kind of go down the food chain with smaller and smaller companies until you end up with investing in private companies that have set up to make a positive social impact. So, yeah, there's a great spectrum of potential investment vehicles, and it's just determined by the client.
So the choices aren't as limited as I would have thought, but all of these opportunities are making their way into families of mutual funds and all that. I don't have to put everything on black like I do on Vegas. They're mutual funds
yeah.
of sustainable
they're,
or
they're mutual
or
funds.
Families?
There are they call exchange-traded funds or ETFs
right.
that are out there. There's a great variety of investment vehicles now, both active and passive, that invest in companies that would be labeled as sustainability leaders. So passive meaning index vehicles. So there are indexes that have been created to follow everything. I mean, there's probably a Georgia index of large companies, and there are sustainability indexes that some funds just track. So they're very low cost, which is part of what I try to do is keep costs down.
Well, I know we're dolphin safe and gluten free here at
That's
Business
right.
Radio X. All of our programming, I don't know how sustainable we are.
Well, all I see is water. You're gluten free. I'm not so sure dolphin safe. Where'd this water come from?
But both Scotts, you That's both right. are also very committed, obviously, because you're investing your time and energy in this other organization that you mentioned earlier with the effort toward being more green. What's the thinking behind that? Is that all driven personally? Is it just good business to be green too? Is it?
Well, for me personally, that's the space I'm in. I have an environmental practice, and it has morphed into a sustainability practice. So I'm helping corporations contract around these concepts. I'm helping them strategically plan around what's important on the environmental front. So and the question that I was going to ask Scott is what additional information are you looking at when you're evaluating companies from through your lens? You know, a typical analysis is going to be focused on financial documents and the sort of general things. What else do you look at?
Yeah, okay.
To decide whether a company is sustainable or not. Mm-hmm.
Well, at one point we had 150 different metrics that we were following. Some were more important than others. And when I say metrics, these are measures of, for instance, the simplest would be carbon, the carbon footprint of the company. So what is its total, you know, carbon, including that which is created by or burned by its supply chain. So you try to track this whole thing down and say, what is the carbon footprint of that company? What is its waste production every year? What's its water consumption every year? And you're not necessarily going to say, wow, that company wastes a lot of water. But you want to see, you know, benchmark it to other companies in the industry and then see what the trend is. Is it getting more efficient or less? Or is it not really concerned with this? We all saw the carbon footprints of companies go down during the recession because they just had less volume, right? So we couldn't say, ooh, look at
the improvement everybody's made.
Everybody's doing great today, right. You know, when in reality you're looking at it on a per unit basis. And so that's sort of the environmental side of things. And I mentioned also sort of tracking employment statistics and diversity. We want to see boards of directors that are not only diverse but are made up of primarily outsiders. Mm-hmm. You don't want Scott Hitch's uncle on the board of Scott Hitch's company and expecting the uncle to be completely independent of Scott's interests. You want them to care about your interests because right. You're the actual owner of the company. Uncle may not have a share, but it's been well proven that companies that have women on the board have fewer accounting restatements. It's a fact.
Interesting.
It can be found on
Google. Is there any metric that you see that's a knockout that you're like, okay,
that didn't work, you mean?
Well, that kills the deal. I can't even look at this company. It isn't performing in this one area.
Well, you know, there's not one. I'll back up. There are certain companies that we exclude because of the nature of their industry. And we try to tell people, we don't tell you what to believe. Your values are your values, not right. our values. But then we have a template where if someone says, well, you know, whatever you think is best, we wouldn't invest in tobacco. Mm-hmm. And any company that's killed 100 million people over the past, you know, 40 years, I'm thinking, maybe I'll skip that one, right? We also, kind of cast away companies in the coal business. That's a dying business. It's just a matter of time, and it's terribly destructive environmentally. So we can't see anything good coming out of coal. And we push back on companies that use coal primarily as their inputs for generating power. But we're terribly agnostic when it comes to things like alcohol and all that. I mean, it is the client's decision. And if, say, for instance, we have a college endowment as a client, they come to us and say, look, I've actually pitched for different endowments who had a social construct before we talked to them. Mm-hmm. No tobacco, no alcohol, no adult entertainment, no gaming. Well, that's easy. Yes. You know, first of all, adult entertainment and gaming are tiny parts of the market. You
that's a lot of recession-proof stuff there. I don't
You're
know.
Right. You're right. Well, there is a fact. That's a fact.
Yeah. Are you seeing a trend of those types of clients divesting from other sorts of sectors? You mentioned coal and tobacco.
There's definitely a trend.
Yeah.
And you guys are probably may or may not be familiar with 350.org, which is an organization that's working to really organize college students to encourage their endowments to divest from fossil fuel companies. And at first you think, well, you know, why would divesting matter, right? Why would you care? I mean, they like to use South Africa as an example, where pressure from investors ultimately changed the country. And that's a great example of how activism can work. And you force, you know, domestic companies here in the States just to get out of South Africa. Mm-hmm. And they did. And they eventually, you know, empowered a whole just marginalized class of people that happen to be in the majority. So they've seen the example work, and they want to, you know, make this happen here. And kids will do pretty much anything if they get their, you know,
free T-shirt. If there's a T-shirt, forget it.
You gotta love them. I mean, I whenever I get kind of bored and frustrated with this, I talk to young people, and they are never frustrated and bored with this. They want to change the world. So they have made inroads in several colleges that have already decided to divest from fossil fuels, sometimes on a you know, sort of a schedule, a calendar over a number of years will divest mm-hmm. from these. Some cities have divested. So the trend is that people are being more discerning in general. And they've said, this is my money, or I am entrusted with it as a fiduciary or a board member. And how does this fit with the values of our organization and with a college that has a massive sustainability program where they've got recycling bins in every corner of the university and they've got all sorts of alternative energy running things, and yet they're investing in, you know, fossil fuels, and they can probably back up from that and say, does this really fit our philosophy and our identity? And what does it mean if we don't change? Do we lose students, prospective students? Do our alumni give less? There are a lot of ramifications both ways. And you can look at it and say, well, what does it do to my performance if I don't have these? This is the big question, right? How does it work? And there have been studies that have shown both, that it will penalize your performance or it won't. But we did some work and we said, okay, well, there's going to be a client who comes to us and says, we want a fossil-free portfolio. So we created one, and we back-tested it, and it actually does fine relative to the market. And the reason it does fine is sort of we did the opposite of what those old social investors did. We don't just take energy out, but we put other cyclical, economically sensitive industries in its place. Mm-hmm. So we have more in basic industry, we have more in technology, we have more in industrial companies. And so you end up beefing up that part that looks the most like the energy sector without actually digging any oil out of the ground. And but we're not adverse to taking things out of the ground. We need that stuff. We're right. pragmatic when it comes to that. You know, we got to get aluminum, steel, whatever.
Right. So.
You rattled off a pretty long lexicon of phrases earlier, or labels: sustainability, responsibility. The one that sounded like it had the most marketing utility for me personally, anyway, was impact mm-hmm. investing. Can you speak more of that a little bit?
Yeah, it is something that. Let's just take some of the big investment banks have decided, wow, there's money to be made here, right? We can create funds, and we can get clients, and we can make fees. And it's not, maybe you don't ask the barber if you need a haircut, but those guys think they think it's a potential trillion dollar asset class of investments that start out with a social mission to meet a need, and it could be alleviating poverty or hunger or whatever, but then creating a business model that does so at a profit. And it's sort of a hybrid of charity and investing. And if it's successful, it's the holy grail, right? Because
sure.
it becomes a sustainable entity as opposed to one that has to go around collecting money every year, which is a really hard thing to do, as we know. Mm-hmm. Raising money is hard, and there's always openings for development directors at every charity I've ever seen.
Right.
But it is an important change in the way business is done. And one of my favorite examples of an impact investment is a company called D-Lite. And D-Lite is a company that makes solar-powered lanterns. And they're little things you carry around, and they're very inexpensive. And they were sold into third-world countries, and India, Africa, you name it. And then there were lots of copies, India Solar Lamp Company and all these other complete imitations. But let's face it. There are probably 4 billion people in the world who would like to have something besides a kerosene lantern in their small dwelling, mm-hmm. which is that kerosene lantern is causing them to have emphysema, right? We know
sure.
that. It kills people, right? It shortens their lifespan. And so there's a local company here, AB Corp, Grey Ghost Ventures, that invested in D-Lite. And you can find it on their website if you go find Grey Ghost. And we have not invested in this, but it's just a great example of a company that started out wanting to fix a problem, which is emphysema in third world countries coming from these toxic lanterns.
Sure.
And the cost of solar technology had come down so much that they could develop this and sell it at a profit. And investors put money into it, not as a charitable investment, but as a real expectation of an exit. Once it gets big enough, maybe it'll be sold to General Electric someday. But you look at that and say, okay, well, that's pretty neat. You know, it's saving people from dying and little things like that, right? But what they found that's interesting is it also helped with literacy, because kids could use it to do homework. And if you were paying for the kerosene, you turn that thing off immediately, right? You're not made of money. You live in India or you live in Africa, right? So as soon as we're done, that thing's off. Right? Okay, sorry, we didn't get all the homework done. Well, now this thing runs until it runs out. So a kid does his homework. He's done with his homework. Then you go outside. You take this little thing out in the village, and you kind of hang out with your friends that you never could see after dark before because, of course, it's pitch black in Africa at 9 o'clock at night or whatever. And it totally changed the social dynamics of these villages. Mm-hmm. So that's the sort of a positive unintended consequence. Quite often they're negative. In this case, it's positive. But it's the best example of a responsible but impactful investment that is off. You know, it's not something that most people can access because the private company has to be bought, you know, through a fund most likely. But for a wealthy investor or an institution, they could do this.
Right.
Yeah.
You mentioned B Corp, and we wanted to talk about that if we have a couple minutes. Can you explain the whole concept and what that means?
A B Corp is not right now in the state of Georgia a legal structure like a C corporation or an LLC, but it is a set of criteria that companies voluntarily follow to meet a higher standard of governance and environmental responsibility. And employer relationships and all of this. So there's an independent company that audits firms like ours. And I mentioned B Corp with Better World Books. We also have, in Georgia, we have Gregos Ventures and some others. And the ones that I didn't mention are going to be mad that I didn't mention.
but it's a short list, right?
It's a very short list. There's only there's less than 800 worldwide right now. But the bottom line is these are companies who have said, we're profit-seeking organizations, but we also understand we have a commitment to the greater good. We have to do more than just earn a profit. And so, you know, we said, well, gee whiz, that's sustainable investing. That's the nature of what we do. Let's see how hard it is to become a B Corp. And yeah, it was a pain in the rear. It was a big audit and required a lot of documentation. But what it did is it allowed us to put in writing things that we already believed. And so if you're a company that has sort of a deep down inside a social purpose, but you still are in it to make a profit, you might take a look at, you know, bcorporation.net and see if your company fits that and if it fits you. I mean, there are a lot of organizations that encourage certain types of sustainable business practices out there. And I would say the Green Chamber of the South would be one that, you know, we try to encourage that sort of thing. But this is what an entrepreneur does on his or her own. This to decide to become a B Corp and say, look, I'm taking it to the next level by when my company is bought by someone, it says here in the bylaws of the company that we don't just maximize profits. We understand there are other important purposes for our business. And that way you don't get sued by the acquirer or whoever that says, you know, you guys are doing the wrong sorts of things with our funds as shareholders. You know, we want you to stop doing all this goody stuff and just focus on profit. No, it's written right here. See, it says we're going to,
you know, now, are there other investment management practices that are B Corps that you're aware of?
Not in this region.
Not
in the Southeast. There are several companies that focus on sustainable and responsible investing out west and up in the Northeast, mm-hmm. That are, you know, fantastic companies. They've been in a lot longer than us. We're only a 3-year-old firm. But they are very well regarded, and actually we employ some of their investment vehicles in our client accounts. Mm-hmm. So we're all kind of in the same business. They do certain things. They're specialists in those, and right. And we say, we should join them whenever possible, rather than recreating the wheel. And if someone's really good at it, I mean, you owe it to your client to give them the best, not just because you made it. You know.
So. Now, Scott, can you talk a little bit about it from your perspective? Like, how would you counsel or any tips about going about doing this?
Well, it's, you know, lawyers are nuts and bolts detail guys, so a lot of that is really incredibly boring. But it's basically setting up the documentation, as Scott suggested, that, you know, in our bylaws, in our operating agreement, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. You touch on the all those points on.
But you can help a firm go through the process if they were interested.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And that's, you know, leave it to the lawyers to put the lawyer stuff in there. That's what we do about it.
So. It was very inexpensive before this second.
<That's right. laughs> So, Scott, number one, how does this work from an investor perspective? Let's suggest just for a moment, let's just play along, that I have pockets as deep as Lee's, okay? Mm. And I'm kind of getting turned on to this whole idea of sustainability investing. How does it work with you? You and I sit down. What are you asking me? What are we doing in the first few steps?
Well, I think for a private investor, it's pretty much the same as any other investment advisor would do. They would have to talk to you and find out what makes you tick. What are you trying to accomplish? Where do you have your money hiding? What sort of tax structures are they? And then we would take a next step, which was understanding what you care about personally, values-wise, and try to build a portfolio that meets those values. And so, as I mentioned, a college that's a religiously oriented college might avoid, the so-called sin stocks. You might very well be an animal rights person here.
You can leave alcohol and gambling in mine.
Yeah,
I can tell you that right now.
More of that.
No, I think you're more of the animal rights kind of. So what we would do, not to belittle animal rights activists, because that's a legitimate concern for a lot of people.
Sure.
And we don't try to tell people, as I said, what to believe. So we would go through and look at all the pharmaceutical companies and all of the companies that could be testing on animals. And we have data on which companies run afoul of those standards. And we would exclude those from your portfolio, and we would replace those companies with others that are similar but do not offend. Mm-hmm. And so, like I said, we take the top 20% of an industry that as we rank them based on these sustainability factors, and we think, hey, that's our investable universe.
You have all this data at your fingertips, or at least you know how to go get it.
And you know what's funny is it is becoming part of the sort of the public domain. There's a lot more information for the average person out there than there used to be. And there's a company, also a B Corp, called CSR, as in Corporate Social Responsibility Hub, CSR Hub. Could be .com, could be .org. But there's a lot of information that one can gain from that website by put in General Electric and see how they score relative to their industry on certain very broad categories. And we look at it at a couple levels more deeply than that. But it's a really good start for someone who has a portfolio and they say, okay, well, is ExxonMobil really the worst oil company that I have? Or, obviously I got rid of my BP, so I don't have to worry about that one now. But, what I'm saying is that this information is becoming more and more available because people are demanding it. Institutions, of course, have been demanding it for a while. Now individuals are too. So
now, what's your challenge when you go in and speak with somebody at a university or whatever large corporation that mm-hmm. you work with in terms of the education? What are some things that they think is true that maybe isn't true?
Yeah. Well, I'll just say that once you get over they think I'm a kook part.
So you don't show up like in a Volkswagen Beetle with like a long...
I have to admit I did try to buy a Leaf. It didn't quite work out, though. The challenges are that there's a language barrier and there's a lot of terminology. Our industry is just littered with jargon and it really makes it very difficult. And you've got to ultimately boil it down to very straightforward fundamental factors that we're investing in companies that are incredibly efficient, that actually do a better job of integrating their employees in the customer service relationship. And that are governed in a way that protects your interests as a minority shareholder, because we all are minority shareholders. And that's at the core of what we do. And that somebody would say, well, that doesn't sound like anything special. And you're darn right. It isn't. It's very traditional. But we realize that most people don't care about these factors in the way that we look at them. But that's a conversation that a corporate officer or a CFO would understand, because that's their business, mm-hmm. right? And so they back up and say, well, I thought you were a green investor or a social investor. I said, well, we can get to that. I mean, if you guys have a strong, a sense of your corporate values that you don't wish to have certain things in your pension plan or your 401k plan for your employees, you may decide you want certain funds to be in there because they would echo some of the values of your firm. You may say, I want some sustainability-focused funds in there. Because we're like, that's our deal now. We're sustainability guys, and we're embracing all this, alternative energy, and yet our employees are still investing in the most basic Vanguard and Fidelity funds. Let's take it up a notch and add some different types of sustainably focused funds. Mm-hmm. So there are lots of ways to have that conversation with people, and it can go in any direction. But you do have resistance to this, partly because it seems too good to be true. There's no way you can get the same returns and have a positive impact. And I was like, well, the numbers actually do prove that you're not right, respectfully, sir. but anyway, so that's kind of the story there.
So now, if somebody wanted to learn more about your firm, is there a website?
No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, we do have a website. It's Boardwalk, as in the Monopoly piece. C as in capital and M as in management.com. So BoardwalkCM.com. And we're also on Facebook. You can find us there. And Twitter. All those things. And they're probably going to be on your website, I guess. But Twitter's not my best friend yet. I haven't gotten it. What do people say about Twitter? I just don't get Twitter. But anyway, but it's fun trying to build a level of understanding and educating. I was talking to someone who's, I found out their church is doing an amazing amount of work with the Georgia Interfaith Power and Light organization. And they're going gangbusters on alternative energy. And they're devotees of what we're talking about. And I said, well, I'd be happy to come talk to your group for, you know, whatever the sustainability issue you're trying to figure out is.
Now, Scott, you're involved in some of the local sustainability organizations in town. Do you have any, you want to share any websites? Or?
Well, we've plugged the Green Chamber, and that's greencs.org. That'd be the main one. And it's emerging as sort of a hub for a lot of the issue-specific organizations. So, but it's very, you know, business-focused and is something that's
And you seem very
well.
Bullish on the sustainability movement.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's here to stay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much to both of our guests today. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next week on Results Matter Radio.
This has been a joint production of Burr and Foreman and Business Radio X. Burr and Foreman is a full-service law firm with offices across the Southeast. If results matter to you and you want them to matter to your law firm, please give Burr and Foreman a call at 404-685-4337. For more information and to find the right attorney for you, visit burr.com. That's B-U-R-R.com.